The Mishnah. Two shutfin who agreed to divide a chatzar can divide it any way they want to, so as long as they both agree with how it's being divided. But if they want to divide it, but they can't come to an agreement on how to divide it, so as long as each one of them ends up getting at least dalad by dalad amas, or 16 square amas, then you can divide it that way. Also, you're not allowed to divide a house, a chicken coop, a cloth, or a bathhouse until both people end up with a piece that's basically functional. But if the second piece loses its shame of a house or a bathhouse, you can't force the other person to divide it. This, for example, is dealing, let's take a case of a bathhouse. There are two shutfin who own a bathhouse, and one of them wants to get out of the relationship. So if they divide it in such a way that both people end up with a chelek that could be called a bathhouse, then everything is fine. However, if it gets divided in such a way where one person ends up with a bathhouse, and one person ends up with something else, with just a room, then if the one who ends up with the room is not happy, then the chalukah is not good. In other words, you can't force a person to take something which gives him nothing in the end. But of course, if they both agree, then you can divide it even unfairly, as long as both agree. But a scroll of Tanakh you cannot divide, since it's a bizayon to cut it in half. Gemara. Rav Huna said when you divide a chatzar, you divide it according to how many doors each one has into the chatzar. If Reuben has two doors in the chatzar, and Shimon has one door, so then the chatzar is two-thirds to Reuben and one-third to Shimon. Rav Chisda says, every owner gets four amas in front of each door. The purpose of that is when a person brings his donkey and he has to sort of park his donkey in front of the door and unload it, he has that spot to do it. But the rest of the chatzar is divided evenly across all the people who own chalakim that look out into the courtyard. Where it says, an achsadra, which is a roof on top of a house that juts out over the chatzar, does not get dalad amas, like one gets dalad amas to be used as service in front of a door into the chatzar. A house on the second floor by the gate of a chatzar with a porch that has a stairwell down to the chatzar also gets dalad amas in front of it. A coop, chicken coop in a chatzar, also doesn't get dalad amas in front of it. The Gemara says if a person wants to switch his door from facing Mavui A and he wants to face Mavui B, the people in Mavui B can prevent him from opening up a door into their Mavui. We know that a Mavui is like a passageway which leads into a Rishus Harabim, and there were many chatzeras, many courtyards, which led into one single Mavui. So you had a number of chatzeras, which opened up into a Mavui, and the Mavui then led into a Rishus Harabim. It used to be that every house had a chiyuv to provide lodging for soldiers of the king. This was called achsanoim. The question is, how do you divide the responsibility? According to the number of doors that a person had in his house, or according to the number of people a person had in the house? Our answer is according to the number of people. Achsanoim lefi bnei adam. If there are five chatzeres that open up into a common mavui, an alleyway leading into a Rishus Harabim, the chatzer farthest in can use the entire length of the mavui. But the chatzer closest to the Rishus Harabim can only use part of the mavui, his chatzer, and the part that goes until the Rishus Harabim. But Reb Shimon says everyone can use the entire mavui, not just the innermost chatzer owner. Daf Yud Beis. If a door was blocked by bricks and the owner decides he wants to reinstate the opening as a door, there used to be a door there, it was blocked, now it's not used as a door, the owner wants to reinstate it as a door, he's entitled to reopen it and get his dalad amas, unless he ripped out the door posts of the door. Then it's too late, because once you rip out the door posts of the door, it's as if you're saying this isn't a door anymore, and now you're not allowed to reopen it and say, I have a door, therefore I have the rights to dalad amas within the chatzar. The halacha is that midrabanan, a kever is metamas someone if they step within dalad amas of the kever. Not only if they're standing on top of it do they become tame, but if they're within dalad amas of it, they become tame. Tysus points out that this halacha is only if the kever isn't marked. If, however, there is a machitza of yud tvachim, which surrounds a kever, that even a kayin can stand next to the kever. If a corpse, a mace, is lying in a closed, sealed building, the building becomes like a kever, and the walls of the building can be metame anyone who touches it. Gemara says, if your alleyway, which is the mavui, was being used as a shortcut from a second town into yours, you can't close it off to them if they have a chazaka, people have a chazaka to use it. Of course, this is only if they originally had rishus to use it. Then you're not allowed to close it off. But if they never had rishus to use it, you could aser them from using this passageway. The Dalet Amos, which are adjacent to a rishus harabim, are considered part of the rishus harabim. So if a lot of people spill over into a mavui next to a rishus harabim when they walk on the sidewalks, the owners of the mavui cannot construct doors to block off and prevent people from using it, since it's next to the rishus harabim. It's next to the Dalet Amos of the rishus harabim. We know that Safik Tuma Birshus Harabim is Tahar, but Safik Tuma Birshus Hayachid is Tameh. This is learned from Saita. If there is a Safik Tuma in this Dalet Amos that borders on a Rishus Harabim, we say Tahar, since it's considered like part of the Rishus Harabim, and since we say Safik Tuma Birshus Harabim is Tahar, the same thing would apply to these Dalet Amos. Rav Avdimi said that from the day the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, Nevuah, prophecy, was taken away from the Nevi'im, and given to the Chachamim. B'yayim shacharav Beis HaMikdash, nitla ha-navua minavim, v'nitna l'chachamim. The Gemara explains that the power of prophecy was divested only from those Nevi'im who were not Chachamim, but those Nevi'im who were also Chachamim retained their power of Navua. Kutras al-Hadaf brings the Ramban, who notes an apparent contradiction. Our Gemara indicates that prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, not all Nevi'im were necessarily Chachamim. As Rabbi Yochanan explicitly states in the Dorim, Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, that Hashem does not give nevuah to somebody unless he's a chacham. The Ramban cites some people who, in resolving this difficulty, distinguish between two types of nevi'im. They say that Rabbi Yochanan, who says that a navi must be a chacham, was discussing a navi who remains in a continuous state of nevuah. Indeed, to attain such a level of nevuah, one must possess many lofty qualities. However, it was possible for one to have a single prophetic vision, even if he lacked the prerequisites delineated by Rav Yochanan in Nedarim. The Ramban, however, is inclined to disagree with this answer, because he holds that one must possess the distinction of being a chacham before attaining any level of prophecy. Consequently, the Ramban interprets our Gemara in a different light. He says that the phenomenon of prophecy can take on two possible forms. One is known as nevuah, and one is commonly referred to as Ruach HaKodesh, divine spirit. Rav Dimi meant to say that the Nevuas HaNaviyim, which is the first form of prophecy, was taken from the prophets, but the Nevuas HaChachamim, which is the power of Ruach HaKodesh, was not taken from them. Thus, explains the Ramban, even subsequent to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there are HaChachamim who could perceive matters beyond the natural capacity of ordinary people through the power of Ruach HaKodesh, which they possess. The Tshuvas Beis Shlema in Arachayim Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Yud Beis addresses the fact that the Gemara at the end of Saita, Daf Mem Ches Amud Aleph, brings a Tosefta, which states that Ruach HaKodesh ceased to exist after the death of Chagi, Zechariah, Umalachi. He submits that the Tosefta does not actually mean that there was no longer any Ruach HaKodesh after that era of the Nevi'im Achrayim, as he cites many proof that many tzaddikim throughout the generations possessed the power of Ruach HaKodesh. Rather, he suggests that the Tosefta is referring to Nevuah, not Ruach HaKodesh, because we find these two terms to be used interchangeably at times. Alternatively, he says, the Tosefta just means that Ruach HaKodesh was no longer common after that era, but it doesn't mean that it entirely ceased to exist. Amemer said that a Chacham is greater than a Navi, and we see in Tehillim, Kapitel Tzadik, the Navi Levav Chachma. Rav Yochanan says when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Nevuah was given to children and to fools. Rav Avdimi also said, before a person eats and drinks, he has two hearts, but once he eats, he has only one heart. The Sifri explains this Gemara, that before a person eats, he has two hearts, one for himself and one for an ani, because since he's hungry, he can now feel bad for the ani who's also hungry. Once he's eaten already, he only feels for himself, he doesn't feel for the ani anymore. Rapuna says, a person who usually drinks wine will be opened up, meaning if one drinks wine in moderation, it opens his mind. If there are three fields in a Yerusha, Ruvain, who is the Bechor, will get two, Pishnayim, and Shimon will get one. And in fact, Reuven has the right to get his two fields together so they're adjacent. His pishnayim is not that he gets one-third and one-third, and Shimon then gets the other one-third, but rather the Yerusha of Reuven is equal to two-thirds of a chelek. Versus, if there were three brothers, Reuven and Levi wouldn't be able to force adjacent fields next to each other. If a few brothers yarshin a father's property, and one is a bar mitzvah, meaning he already owns land adjacent to a specific portion of the Yerusha, we give that portion to him. And if the other brothers don't want to give it to him, we force them. Kaifen al-Midas Sedaim, because since he's a bar mitzvah, He already has land next to some portion of the Yerusha. It's nice to be able to give him a portion of land next to that portion, so we'll have two pieces that are together. Daf Yud Gimel. What if there's no way to divide a field so each person gets a half a chelek with a full shem? As we mentioned in the Mishnah before, but if you want to divide a field, or you want to divide a bathhouse, if two people agree on a specific type of division, that's fine. But if you can't figure out a way to do it so two people are happy, then it has to end up in the end that both have a chelek which has a shame of a field or a shame of a bathhouse. So if, for example, you divide up a bathhouse, one person gets the room where the bath is, and the other person gets a dressing room. So the person who gets the dressing room really doesn't have a bathhouse anymore. That you wouldn't be allowed to force on a partner. So what do you do in a case where you can't figure out a way to do it, the two people want to divide it? If Reuven wants to terminate the shutfis, what recourse does he have? The more answers, according to Rabbi Yehuda, with the halacha of good or agud. Either you assess, the person can say, either you assess what my chelek is worth and you buy it from me, or I assess what your chelek is worth and I buy it from you. Because he says, e efshi b'shutfasi. Rashi explains, I can't live with the shutfis anymore. Therefore, you have to find some way to do it, and the way to do it is good or agud. Reb Nachman says, we can't force someone to do this either. In other words, this whole halacha of good or agud does not apply. Since the other shutif can say, it's not your business to force me what to do, that what I don't want to do. Therefore, the whole halacha of good or agud does not apply. The Rajba, by the way, holds that the din of good or agud is a takanas chachamim, to allow a partner a way out if there was no other option. However, most Rishonim hold, this only applies if they accidentally ended up as shutfim, for example, in a Yerusha. But if they bought a field together, and they went through a partnership, and they created the partnership on their own, then this halacha of good or agud would not apply. The Gemara then asks Akasha against Reb Nachman, who holds that there's no klal of goyd or agud. If two brothers yarshin an evet, the bechor gets two-thirds of the evet, and the other brother gets one-third. How is it possible, if you don't hold of goyd or agud, is it going to be possible to split this evet? You can't cut him into two-thirds and in one-third, so how would you do it? Our answer is, he can work for the bechor for 2 days, and then he can work for the other brother for 1 day. That would be your two-thirds, one-third. Taisvis explains that the chiddush of this teretz, because it seems logical, you can work for 2 days and 1 day. What's the chiddush of this Gemara? Taisvis says, you would think that this isn't really equitable, two-thirds, one-third. Because let's say an Eved works 8 hours a day. He works from 9 to 5. It takes 3 hours to get to the marketplace, and it takes 3 hours to get back from the marketplace. So the one brother that has him for 1 day will lose 9 to 12 as the Eved goes to the marketplace, and he'll lose 2 to 5 as he comes back from the marketplace, and he'll only actually be able to stand in the marketplace itself from 12 to 2. Bashenki, the other brother that had him for 2 days, he'll be able to get the 3 hours from 9 to 12 on day 1. Then he gets the use of him for the 5 hours from 12 to 5, and the second day he has him the whole day until 2 to 5. So the actual hours in the marketplace will be much longer if he has 2 days versus if he has 1 day. But that's the chiddush of the Gemara. But even in that case, the Bechor could get him for 2 days, and the other brother could get him for 1 day. Then we ask a question on Rabbi Yehuda, from the case of Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Charen. Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Charen is if two partners own an Eved, and only one partner frees him, but the other partner doesn't. So for the partner who frees him, which is like half of the Eved, he's a Ben Charen. For the other half of the Eved who wasn't free, he's still an Eved. He has a very big problem. Why? Because he can't marry Yisrael, because he's still a Chatzi Eved. And he can't marry a Shivcha Knanis because he's a Chatzi Ben Charen already. So therefore, he can't be Mekai in the mitzvah of Piri Verivya. And the Pasuk says, Laisoyhu Veraha, Lashabis Yitzara. So he has a very big problem. He can't marry anybody. What is he to do? So Beis Shammai says, in order to solve this problem, we force the second partner to give him a Shtar Shichur. So now he becomes a full Ben Charen. And Beis Hillel came to agree with this. If we hold like Rabbi Yehuda, that we hold to the Klal of Goyde Agud, why can't the Eved come forward and buy out his half? Why is it necessary to force the second partner to give him a shtar shichra? The Gemara answers, goyde agud only works if you can give your shutif a two-way option. Either I buy you, or you buy me. A little bit like a snaigad u b'nei Reuven. It has to go both ways. But here the Eved can only buy, but he can't sell part of him, that's a Yisrael, to become an Eved Kanani. That's impossible. Since it's not a two-way street, the call of goyde agud would not apply. And you need this whole inyan that you have to force the second partner to give him a shtar shichra. Taisvus here, Kaifin es Rabbi, brings the Minchas Chinuch regarding the mitzvah of Piri Verivya. Since the half of him is a Yisrael, and the half of him that's a Yisrael is Mechuyev in Piri Verivya, let's say, Esei Deichel Leis Esei, and should be deicha a possible iser of arayas. Taisus answers, since the mitzvah of piriv riva is only mekuyim when the child is actually born, you can't say esa deicha leisa say for just a maisa bia. Also, Taisus answers that even if the mitzvah of peru or avu is a good reason to permit this chatzi eved to transgress his iser to marry a bas yisrael, nevertheless, it's not enough reason to permit the bas yisrael to transgress her iser to marry him, since women are not mechuyev in the mitzvah of piriv rivia. Furthermore, says Taisus, even if women are mechuyev in the mitzvah of piriv rivia, as we see is the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Breka in Gittin, Daf Mem Gimel, Amid Beis, nevertheless, a bas yisrael would not be permitted to marry a chatzi eved, since she has the alternative of fulfilling her mitzvah by marrying stam a Jewish man. What does she have to marry this chatzi eved chatzi ben charen for? Therefore, her mitzvah of peru or avu cannot override the iser to marry an eved, since she could fulfill her mitzvah without transgressing the iser. In other words, efshe l'kayim shneihem, she could do both by just simply marrying stam a Jew. The Gemara says that the takana of goyrei agud is actually a machlokes tanoim. Although in general we can divide things in half, kisvei kodesh cannot be divided in half, since they be zayin, unless they're two different scrolls. This is what Shmuel says. In general, we paskin that there is a halacha of goyd o agud. Rameir holds a person may connect Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim in one scroll and not separate them. He doesn't have to separate them. Even though in Megillah we learned you're not allowed to put Nach on top of a Torah, scrolls are different because people know what's in the Torah versus the Navi and they won't mix it up. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he says all three must be separate. The Rabbanan say each Sefer Navi must be separated as well. The rule is that between each of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, you must leave four blank lines. Daf Yudalet. Although normally you must leave four lines between each Sefer of the Torah and three lines between each Sefer Navi, but if one of the Nevi'im ends at the bottom of a column, you can start the next one from the top of the next column and don't have to skip three lines. That's because this whole mitzvah is only Hidur mitzvah. We also know that a Tchilas Sefer and a Sof Sefer need to have some blank parchment, so some can go around a stick that holds up the Torah. When you do Hagbah, you know, the Sefer Torah is rolled around an Eitz Chaim, so there has to be a little bit of blank room at the end of the Torah for the thing to be able to go around that. The Gemara says, by a Sefer Torah, a shul can leave it rolled to the spot it will be read the next time, b'tzibur. So there's no tircha t'tzibura. If you have to turn the Torah back to Bereishis every time that you were reading from Parshas Chukas, you'd have to keep the shul waiting for 10 minutes till you roll it to Parshas Chukas. Therefore, you can keep it on that spot if that Sefer Torah is going to be used for the Kriya Satira every week. But if it isn't used for Kriya, it should be rolled back to the beginning, to Bereishis. Also, the height and the circumference of the Sefer Torah should be equal. The Rambam says this is not ma'akif, and in fact, generally speaking, we don't have that today. If one teaches a child the pasuk of Torah, Tziva, Lanu, Moshe, it's as if he teaches the child the entire Torah. The Gemara says the Aron HaKodesh in the Mishkan was 2.5 amas long, 1.5 amas wide, and its height was 1.5 amas. And we hold that the amma here is an amma bas shisha tvachim. This is shita of Remeir, that one amma equals to shisha tvachim. Rav Yehuda holds an amma is equal to chamisha tvachim. It's bas chamisha tvachim. And the height and the width of the luchais were 6 tvachim, and the thickness was 3 tvachim. The Sefer Torah Moshe Rabbeinu was used for the Melech to read the Torah for Hakel, which was once every 7 years. Rashi says this was also the Torah used for laying by the Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur. Inside the Aron Kodesh, one could find the Luchais, the Shivrei Luchais, as well as all of the Kinuyim, the 70 ways to say the Shem Hashem. When one writes Nevi'im, they should be written in the following order: Yehoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, Melachim, Yirmiyah, Yecheskel, Yeshaya, and Treyaser. The majority of Yirmiyahu discusses the Churban. Yecheskel begins with the Churban and ends with Nechama. Yeshaya is mostly Nechama. Hence the order as it is, Yirmiyahu, Yecheskel, Yeshaya. The proper order of Ksuvim when it is written in one Megillah is Rus, Tehillim, Iyov, Mishle, Koheles, Shir HaShirim, Eicha, Daniel, Esther, and Divrei Hayamim. Technically, Iyov should have been written first, because it's the first in chronological order. But since it was a tragedy, it wasn't written first. Ivy Gemara asks, Rus was also a tragedy? Gemara answers, it had a happy ending. That's why it's put in that order. Gemara asks, who wrote all of the Sifrei HaKodesh? Gemara answers, Moshe wrote the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and the Parsha of Bilam, as well as Iyov. That means you could ask, if Moshe wrote the entire Torah, why did the Gemara have to specially say that he wrote Parshas Bilam? It's Pashat, it's part of the Torah. Haladaf brings the Ritva, who asserts that the Brisa is not referring to the prophecies and the parables of Bilam, which are recorded in Parshas Balak, because that, of course, is part of the Torah, and was given by Hashem through Moshe, as was the rest of the Torah. The Ritva speculates that the Brisa is referring to some other book which we don't have, which expounded and elaborated on the prophecies of Bilam. This book was indeed separate from the Torah, and apparently existed during the time of the Tanoim, but then it was lost. Rashi, however, indicates that the Brisa is referring to the passages of Bilam contained in the Torah. Rashi explains that it's mentioned as a separate entity because the prophecies contained in those passages are not directly connected to Moshe and his Torah. Daf Tes Vav. David wrote Tehillim with the help of the Asara Zikanim. Yirmiah wrote Yirmiyahu and Melachim. Chizkiyahu and some helpers wrote Yishaya, Mishlei, Shir HaShirim, and Kohelet. Yishaya, by the way, couldn't write it himself because he was murdered. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah recorded Yechezkel, Daniel, and Esther. Ezra wrote his own, and he also wrote Divrei Hayamim until the time where he was living in the part of Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim, the rest of it, was ended by Nehemiah. Rabbi Yehuda says Yehoshua wrote his own Sefer, and the last eight psukim of the Torah, beginning with the pasuk Vayamas Sham Eved Hashem. This must be, because how could Moshe Rabbeinu write about himself, Vayamas Sham Moshe? Mechsi Kishikra, looks like a lie. Moshe couldn't have written that he died. Rabbi Shimon says, Moshe did write the last eight psukim. Hashem told him what to write, Vayamas Sham, and Moshe wrote this with tears in his eyes. The Marsha says, Pshat, these tears that we're talking about, isn't tears that were in his eyes, but that Moshe actually wrote the last eight psukim with his tears on the parchment. So he wouldn't have to write something which appeared false with ink, i.e. with a Davar HaMiskayim-like ink, versus tears which are not a Davar HaMiskayim. He wrote it with the tears which are not a Davar HaMiskayim, and Yehoshua then went and filled in those words with ink later on. Gemara says the last eight psukim must all be part of one aliyah and cannot be separated to show that they are different from the rest of the Torah. In Sefer Tehillim, David HaMelech uses many shirais and tishbachais from the Asara Zekanim. There were seven prophets who said nevuah for the nations of the world, including Bilam and his father. The Gemara says there was a tzaddik who lived amongst the Goyim, and his name was Iov, and he came to this world to be rewarded. And when he had Yisurim, he cursed Yisrael. But it's really a machlokes if Iov was a Jew or a Goy. Some say he lived in the time of the Shoftim. Others say he lived in the times of Achashverosh. Others say that he lived in the time of Yaakov Avinu. What is the pshat of the pasuk in Rus, Vayihi bimei shvait ha-shaiftim? Of course they were judging. What else were shaiftim doing? My answer is that the people were judging them as well. Normally shaiftim judge other people. In this case, they were being judged by the people. That's why it says Vayihi bimei shvait ha-shaiftim. The Gemara says there were more good things said about Iov than said about Avram Avinu, and whoever took a pruta from Iov was blessed. The laws of nature were also defied for him. For example, sheep killed wolves instead of vice versa. Iov was also given a taste of a me'ein olam haba. Daf Tes Zayin. Later in life, Iov suffered many tragedies, but he still gave bracha to Hashem, as the Gemara brings in a series of psukim. The Gemara also says, lo haya v'lo nivra, never was and never existed. This is a phrase that something, which is used for many things even today, that something doesn't really exist or something wasn't created. This was used concerning Iov, that Iov never was and never existed, but is only a mashal, only a parable, a typical figure to teach us the virtue of resignation amidst great suffering. Gemara says a satan comes to this world and pushes people to do averas, and then goes up to Shamayim to convince Hashem to punish the person for doing the avera. Reish Lakish said, the same creation, the satan, who is the Yetzer Hara, is also the one who reports bad deeds to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the same creation, as well, that puts people to death. I.e., he's not only the Satan, he's not only the Yetzer Hara, but he's also the Malach Hamavis. The Gemara says the seeming bad behavior of the Satan regarding Iov was similar to the behavior of Penina. There was a good reason for the Satan doing what he did and Penina doing what she did. The Satan said bad things against Iov, so Hashem wouldn't think Iov was greater than Avram Avinu. And Penina was Chayta, so that it would force Tfilas from Chana, so that she would be able to have children. Penina, we know, had 10 children, and Chana had none. Penina would taunt Chana, reminding her of her childlessness. Reb Levi held that Penina had a pious purpose and acting as Chana's adversary. By making Chana feel bad, Penina caused her to pray for children. Nevertheless, Penina was severely punished for her actions. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz raises the obvious question. If Penina's motives were for the sake of Lashem Shemayim, with the purest of intentions, why was she punished? The answer is that if one causes another person to suffer, even if it was done with good intentions and Lashem Shemayim, the person is still chayev for hurting the other person, and therefore the person is chayev to be punished for having hurt the other person. The Gemara says, Bara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yetzer Hara, Bara Lai Taira Tavlin. The Rabbi Yishlam created the Yetzer Hara, but he also created Taira as a spice to be able to fight against the Yetzer Hara. The Sefer Insights, a Talmudic treasury, says that the Taira is the spice which nullifies the evil thoughts conjured up by the evil inclination, by the Yetzer Hara. Man is therefore not coerced to do averus, he has the Taira to protect him. Said Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Taira is the preventive medicine, Musar is the cure. He also brings the Lubavitcher Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who says that at first glance it would appear that the Yetzer Hara must be eliminated. Spices, however, do not destroy food, but on the contrary, they flavor and season it. The essence of the Yetzer Hara is the essence of the power of craving per se, and thus one must season and flavor and transform this craving to something good. The Gemara says, Iov didn't look at other women, but Avraham Avinu was such a tzaddik, not only didn't he look at other women, he didn't even know what his own wife Sarah looked like, because the pasuk says, Hine no yadati, ki isha yefas maret. Now I know you're such a beautiful woman, but before he married her, he didn't know that. The Rishonim ask, how did he never see his wife? The Gemara in Kedushin Daf Mem Aleph says, Osur la'odam l'kadesh isha, ad shiirena, shema tiskenaba. A person is not allowed to marry a woman until he sees her first, because it's possible he may not see that she has some kind of a chasarn. Then he'll marry her, and he won't like her, because then he'll discover the chasarn later. So how did he marry her without ever seeing her? Rishonim answer, he only took on all the chiyuvim of the Torah after he had a bris mila. Sarah he married before he had a mila. Therefore, he didn't have this chiyuv to see her before he married her. Gemara says, every drop of rain in the clouds comes from an individual mold, and each bolt of thunder and lightning is a separate bria. From Iov we learn that when a person is suffering, he can't be held accountable for everything that he says. If someone has a good friend who is dedicated to him, it's worth living for. The Marshal brings the famous Gemara in Tainus about Chayni HaMa'agel, where Chayni said, Oy chavrusa, o misusa. It's better that I shouldn't live if I don't have a good friend, and I would rather die if my friend is not around, or i.e. if no one knows who I am. The world needs both Zecharim and Nekevus, but it says, Ashrei mi shebanav Zecharim, oylai lemi shebanav Nekevus. The Gemara says the day that Esav came from the field was the day of the Yartzeit of Avraham Avinu. So Yaakov was preparing lentils for Yitzchak in honor of the Yartzeit. And lentils are made for an oval since they're round. And Esav gave up his Bechira, as we know the famous story from Toldos, that he gave up his Bechira in order to eat some of the lentils. Daf Yud Zayin. There were three people who had a taste of Olam Haba while they were here in Olam Hazeh, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. As the Pasuk, for example, says by Avram, V'Avram Berach as Avraham Bakol. Also, for the Avos, the Yetzer Hara held no shlita over them. Others say David also had control over his Yetzer Hara. There were six people when they left this world. It wasn't because of the Malach HaMavis, but instead it was via a Misas Neshika, a kiss from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These six people were Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. And we see by these people, it says, the Pasuk says, Vayamas al pi Hashem, through the Misas Neshika, from the mouth of Hashem. There were seven who, after they were nifter, worms didn't eat their remains, the six mentioned before, as well as Binyamin. Some say David is also included in this. There were four, but they were nifter only because of the chait of the Nachash by Chava, of the Eitz Hadas, but they had no chatayim at all. Binyamin ben Yaakov, Amram avi Moshe, Yishai avi David, and Kila ben David. This marks the end of this parak, and Mirtz Hashem on the next tape, we'll begin parak sheni, la Yachbar.